Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Below the belt, I'm back. All right, so let's cut all this fucking, oh, I'm Cal and I'm Flav, and we'll talk to each other because Flav's got nothing better to do now. So, welcome back. It's through Skype. So this is what we have to do because Flav lives in an absolute shithole. Can't come to real places.
Alex,
no,
I
haven't finished my intro
I'll
yet. Finished my intro yet. Shut the fuck up. So because he wants to be involved now, we've got to do it by Skype, which means I've got to do it by Skype. So welcome back. Cal, how are you?
I'm all right, mate. Very good, thank you.
Yeah, Flav, how you doing?
None of that is true. I'll happily not do it. I'm doing you a favour. Remember who's podcasting for a living and who ain't, all right? And the other thing is,
That's not true.
Your mouth.
How is the mansion?
Well? Listen, Alex, I feel weird about you hosting. It's like fucking Darth Vader meeting Luke Skywalker.
Well, I don't watch Star Wars.
Luke Skywalker's a dweeb.
So talking real sentences about stuff that actual people watch, yeah?
I watched the boxing the weekend.
Did you? Did you like it?
It was alright, innit?
Yeah, was it loads of dirty men burping and stuff? It's horrible, isn't it?
Well, I didn't go to the boxing.
Where should we start? Well, I haven't seen a running order, Cal. So what are we doing?
There
where
is
we start?
No running order. We don't really do running orders these days. It's like, what do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about Canelo or do you want to talk about your man Crawler?
Let's talk about Crawler first.
Okay, go on then.
Because I'm currently staring at my signed Anthony Crawler boxing glove, which our dear friend Flav got me.
Yeah, so that's so nice.
I haven't forgotten that. But during that fight, I nearly set fire to it. So
how?
I think the time's right for him to go, Cal. I'm going to put that out there. I'm going to see what you think.
It's what, because of his performance. Full disclosure here, I fell asleep during the fight. I watched the first round and I fell asleep, so I've not seen any of it. So I'm going to need you, as the Anthony Crawler expert, to tell the people how he looked in his final bout as a professional.
Well, I'll tell you what it was like. You know when you watch like a testimonial game, and, you know, your favourite player from 10 years ago comes back and you're really excited to see him. You know, if you can try and touch him on the back as he walks past you, that's great. You know, you're not fussed about the performance. But then he goes one-on-one with a keeper and falls over and coughs up some quite dodgy-looking phlegm at the end of it. And you think, that's pretty much what it was like.
Oh,
I wanted to hug him through it. It was hard to watch. He was done, and I don't know whether a bit of the occasion got to him, perhaps, because he must have had, you know, all week messages and people paying tribute to him and all the rest of it. But it was hard to watch. And, you know, it was, the cards were...
one was level and one was like 8 rounds to 2. Level 2, 8 rounds to 2.
I mean, it was...
It was bad cards. It was a robbery.
He lost. I nearly left. I had to...
Clearly.
I couldn't watch the group. I wanted to leave the group because I knew what T was going to say. But yeah, I mean, it was... The cards were a disgrace.
He lost. It's like saying the cards... You can say the cards are a disgrace when... You know, the decision was right, but the cards are wired. That's generally when you can say that the cards are a disgrace. It was a daylight robbery. He should never have been given the result. It was only because it was his farewell fight that it was that he got the nod. And that goes on to enable me to make another point, which was, what was the point of it? Why did it happen? Tell me that.
Well, I'll tell you why it happened. It's because they had... a date for the Manchester Arena, which I think originally on that date, not at the Manchester Arena, but originally on that date, there was meant to be a Next Gen show, which then didn't materialise for a couple of reasons. I might be wrong. Scott, I'm sure, will be able to confirm this for us, but or deny it. But then there was an opportunity to have Manchester Arena on that date, and you book it out, and then there was a question of having Crawler and having Katie Taylor. Obviously, Manchester, with its Irish contingency, easy to get to from Ireland.
Mm.
You know, they knew they could sell out the Manchester Arena on a Saturday night fight night, where they can claim, you know, they can put Katie Taylor in a fight and make a, you know, a half decent card, I suppose. And, so, and it's got merit in the fact that it's Crawler's last fight. The fact that they could sell out the arena quite easily and probably not have to, as Eddie says, do their conkers on it, probably made it quite an easy decision.
So he basically, Eddie Hearn's rung up Crawler and went, I don't give a fuck what you're doing on this date. You're having a farewell fight and you're going to fucking love it.
Well, yeah, if you like. I mean, we don't want to say anything bad about Eddie because we know how you feel about him. You don't want you getting upset. But
I've just criticised him, but that makes no sense. Look, we can't go for this whole podcast. Well,
yeah,
you're taking...
Yeah, you did it tongue-in-cheek, don't you, really? Because we know what you really think of him. Well,
I think both of you should be saying thank you to Eddie Hearn for everything he's done for British boxing. You should be, both of you should be on your knees sucking his dick.
I'll say thanks. I'll say cheers, mate. That's the difference. So I think you would be on your knees. Mate, and I don't think it'd have anything to do with
if
boxing.
If it weren't to do with Eddie Hearn, you wouldn't even know boxing. You wouldn't even watch the single fight. It's only because you were drawn in by the mega fights that he created. I don't think you watched boxing before Anthony Joshua turned up.
You are. I don't like you being back. Why have we got him back?
Because you ain't been around, mate.
All I'm doing, mate, is just keeping it going, keeping it afloat.
Well, I'll tell you what you are, right? You're a surrogate Alex. How does that make you feel?
Well, I've birthed your career, mate. So, anyway, let's stop this, Al.
It was the least said about Crawler, the better, I think. But, you know, I think what they were trying to say afterwards was, you know, blessing in disguise, really, because, you know, what if he'd have come back and looked really good? You know, maybe Luke Campbell might have fancied him. I was like, oh, for God's sake, come on. Just let it go, which he has.
I think a better way to talk about Crawler in this instance is to look back at what he's achieved with limited talent, and it's incredible. You know, he's a millionaire. He never has to worry about money ever again. He's had some fights against the very best in the world, and they got some really... sort of top draw, sort of highlight real wins, and the vast majority of boxers with his talent wouldn't achieve what he has, and it's down to his heart and his pride and his willingness to prevail.
And that's what makes this sport, and this is what everything I love about boxing. You know, it's the whole point of following people and being invested in people who are not necessarily the best, you know, but someone that you can see is either working hard or just has something about them.
That's why Kel likes Mayweather.
You know, and part... Yeah, exactly. But part... Do you know what it was? So, you know, when it really took off was when he stopped Perez with that body shot in the second fight. And I was just like, no one called that. No one even said he'd fight him.
This is the guy that beat Mitchell, right?
No. That was Barroso.
Barroso.
Yeah, but both. Barroso as well. They said he'd never fight Barroso either. They said, no, I'll just duck him. You know, he'll go another way or whatever.
Yeah, I remember going into that fight thinking Crawler, he's going to get handled.
And he's going to get smashed
when he
up,
sunk yeah. that. It did, I'm sure it was a body shot when he just sunk that.
Yeah, it was
that shot in. It was done and dusted.
Yeah, he'll never be kind of fully accepted within, you know, inverted commas, kind of boxing hardcore or whatever. But because they would have felt he's been almost given some opportunities, but he's done what he's done, and it was nice to see. I mean, Sky made a big deal of it, is what you'd expect, but I like the fact that he got to finish his career in under his terms. You know, it's good. It was good. Let's talk about Katie Taylor.
I was going to ask Flav to give us an idea of what she said post fight, but he's already done it for us.
Right. Okay.
She's all right this before the fight. After the fight, it's when it all goes to shit.
She gets emotional, and then she sounds like that.
You must say that the reaction of the crowd was, I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was so good, and she boxed the blinder. To be fair, she did box really well.
Great.
And you know, the woman, the girl that she was boxing, she could look after herself.
She's game, yeah.
And she was reigning world champion herself. You know, she was on pretty good form, won her last four, and Katie Taylor going up in weight. Feet were still there, shot selection was still there. She boxed a blinder, Katie Taylor, and she deservedly won the decision.
Coming off of a bit of what poor form as well, like not boxing the levels that she kind of set out when she first turned pro, and she kind of lit up every fight she was in, and I think she lost her dad as a trainer. Her dad met another woman and essentially left her in the lurch. And she's found a new trainer. But it's taken a while for her to make that transition because her dad's always been there. And you saw that in her performances. But for her to go up to a weight that isn't her natural weight, and she was physically smaller. You could see how smaller she was than the other bird. But she did, like you say, the shot selection, the accuracy of her punches was excellent.
What do you feel? I mean, like I said, the crowd reaction was great, and she seemed to be talking as if she'd kind of reached the top almost for what she'd expected that she was going to achieve. I mean, what's the next phase for Katie Taylor in terms of success? In terms of what can she then go on and achieve now, really? I mean, because she's 33, I think, isn't she?
Yeah.
Do you reckon she could have O'Hara Davis? Love to see that. I reckon she.
I mean, O'Hara would probably. Quit.
O'Hara Davies is about. Well, he's the same size. Well, he's the same size as her in terms of weight.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's a bloke, and so he. I don't want to be sexist, but
it's sounding gonna smash her sounding around. A bit sexist.
You know, if you take a professional boxer that's a man, a professional boxer that's a woman, and they weigh the same.
Yeah.
You would kind of bet on the man. I don't know.
You would if you're a sexist.
Yeah. Sexist. It's casual sexism from Cal. Yeah. We've had casual
hashtag
racism
biology
from Flav.
I know, I was just about to say that, biology. But Katie Taylor said post-fight, she actually mentioned two names that you'd really want to hear. Delphine Persson, who she won unified the lightweight titles with, and Cecilia Brackhouse, the queen, who's the undisputed welterweight champion and has been for a long, long time.
That would be massive. That would be huge. Like, that's like I know fuck all about women's boxing, I've got to be honest, right? But I know.
Dude, you kept that quiet.
I know that bird you mentioned.
That bird.
Yeah, I know her, and I know how good she is, and I know you know that fight is special, isn't it? But what about Serrano? I've seen her a couple of her fights.
Yes.
She's mad. She can make weight. No matter what division is, she makes the weight.
Yeah, she goes like super fly, super lightweight, boxed at featherweight in her last fight. Like, she's jumping up and down all the divisions. She had the WBO super lightweight title not long ago, but she obviously vacated it so she can jump back down to super flyweight.
I know, mad. Like, and this is the thing.
Slimming world's good.
Yeah,
these
like
days, isn't
25
well,
pounds.
There's not, the depth isn't there, isn't it, in the women's game. So you have to move up and down in order to get the challenges in the fight. So, you know, the fact that she does it and can perform and just seemingly does it at will. I saw a little video she got on Twitter about how she goes about this process, and it looks horrendous, but she just kind of gets on with it. She's tough as nails, so you know that. I'm sure that'll be a good fight as well.
Yeah, she really did a number on Heather Hardy in her last fight. And Heather Hardy was, you know, she was coming in, she was 22-0. She was coming in pretty good form. And Amanda Serrano just smashed her up. And Heather Hardy failed a drug test afterwards as well. Like, she just absolutely smashed her up. Like, she's, they, like you said, there's not a lot of really high quality in women's boxing. But there is about five or six that are really, really good. Yeah. And it's just a shame they're a little bit spread out. Just going back to the qualified, it's something really nerdy of me that I've just noticed that entered my brain the other day. In America, the judges are the judges and the referees are the referees. But over here, they're both. Do you think that that's why... And you state the scorecards on Saturday. Do you think that's probably why sometimes the judging over here is not very good?
Sorry, I'm lost it.
Perhaps.
What was it? Explain that to me.
So in America,
you have judges that the judges all they do is judge,
and the referees referee.
But
they don't do both.
On the same, yeah.
But over here they do.
So sometimes they judge and sometimes they ref.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You'll see. You know, Terry O'Connor or
Dave Paris,
whatever. You know, there'll be judges in a domestic fight.
What you're saying, so like, is an acquired skill. Like, you can't do both. You have to be. It's a specialized skill.
I'm not saying anything. I'm just putting it out there. I'm just saying it's unusual. It's just there's a difference. Do you think it makes a difference?
I think there's two ways of looking at it. You could look at it in the fact of, you know, referees are judging lower card fights themselves anyway, and lower round fights anyway. Mm. So they know what they're looking for. It's something that they will have done thousands and thousands of times. So is that an expertise that you just ignore when it's at your disposal? But then, on the other hand, you're right. You know, the relationship that they then have with fighters and people that they know and trainers that they know and that they like and that they see at every show, and, you know, is that susceptible to being as professional as you can be in every time you sit down at that desk?
I've got a radical solution to this. So hear me out, right?
Okay.
One, there should be a pool of money that all of the sanctioning belts and professional footballers and promoters should pay into, right? And this pool, like, it's a tax. It's like whatever it is, 0.1% of a purse goes into this fund that will pay for independent judges that don't get paid for by home promoters, right? Step one. Step two.
Yep.
They need to be in some sort of soundproof bird box by the stage, yeah. So they can't hear fuck all. All they can do is watch the fight. And then you might get a sort of some level of an accurate decision. I'm not really bothered.
So is it just the WBC that have the headphones?
Yeah, they had the soundproof headphones. Yeah, they're the only ones that have used it. Yeah. Not all the time, but it
makes sense, though, right?
It does make sense. Yeah, it does, because the Josh Taylor fight. You know, there was a lot of shots that were landing on, you know, Pro Grey's gloves, and you'd hear rah in the crowd.
Yeah,
but they hadn't landed; it landed on the glove.
The thing is, it's hard as a human being. It's hard to not be influenced by it. Like we're going to come onto it, but I watched a Canelo fight. I saw some with an English commentary and some with German, I think it was, or Russian or Ukraine.
Okay,
and
brilliant.
Yeah, one of them, isn't it? You expect to tell the difference between Russian and Ukraine? That isn't racist.
Yeah,
that's not racist.
You can't tell the difference between a German language and Russian.
Of course I can. I meant Russian or Ukraine. Anyway, look.
You said German. Go on.
I'll add German to it. So what? What's going to happen? I work for myself. Nothing's going to happen. So but how are you influenced by the sound of? And I try, you know, I don't really have a dog in the fight for most boxing matches I watch. I'm just interested. But you are swayed by how the commentators talk about it. And you are swayed by the sound of the crowd, especially if you're in it, where it's hard to see, no matter how close you are to ringside, every punch that's landed.
It's tricky. It's definitely something that can evolve in boxing without really a huge amount of protest.
Yeah,
because it all seems relatively common sense, small decisions that can be made.
Can I ask a question?
There's nothing else really of note to talk about that card, though, is there?
Can I just ask a quick question about judging? Does it bother you that much when you see, like, a bad call or a bad card? Does it, like, really bother you?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
I don't really... It doesn't bother me. I'm just like, oh, well, happened again, innit? I'm not going to not watch.
Yeah, but listen,
I'm not going to not watch the next boxing fight. It's not like it's ruining the sport for me.
Well, I think it depends, really. I mean, there's times where it's like, well, what is the point? You know, we're talking about, you know, we'll come on to it with Canelo and Kovalev, but, you know, even the commentators on DAZN and stuff like that are saying, look, you know, it's almost like accepted that, you know, he's almost going to be given 2-3 rounds anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and Kovalev talked about it after the fight. He's just, they perfectly accept the fact that, you know, I'm 3 rounds down before I start. You know, and whilst that's, if everyone kind of accepts it and it's just one of those things, then,
but it's,
yeah, that's a little
yeah, but it's also the way the sport's always been, like the hometown fight or the big money draw always,
that doesn't make it right.
No, I know, but if you think that his talent and his hard work has got him to a position where he gets these advantages, in the same way that in football is that the biggest clubs get the biggest advantage because they've got the most money, he's worked himself to be the A side in every fight regardless of where he is, because of his ability and what he's achieved. So it's almost like he's earned that. I get what you're saying. It's not fair. It's not 50-50. It should start even keel, but it never does in sport. There's always a home and away fighter.
No.
There's always fighters with advantages and those that don't. There's always a fighter that gets to demand what...
Yeah, but usually... But there is an element of, if the performance is that good, you know, you can't stop a football match, you know, 60 minutes in because the other team is just too good. You know, it's we're boxing. If you get to the end of a fight and that you've been in that fight and you hear the bell of the last round, then you should be in a position where there's a possibility of you winning. And sometimes it doesn't feel like that's the case. And that's like I said, it's not something that I, you know, have sleepless nights over, but it's definitely something that boxing can improve on.
Yeah.
And as a sport, and if it continues to grow and continues to, you know, it's probably plateaued slightly, hasn't it, over the last couple of years, after, you know, a very steep curve of growth and interest.
Mm.
You know, it's something that if it wants to continue to grow, then it has to, that's something that it's going to have to start taking into consideration. Well, it's
lucky we've got the YouTubers in, isn't it, to keep that audience growing.
That's true.
Because that's this weekend, isn't it?
It's the big fight. Not the big fight this weekend. No, staying up for it, Cal? Staying up for it? No, how are you getting up for it? Set your alarm. Big one.
It's
big one now.
I've tried to be open-minded about it, and I understand why Eddie's doing it, because, you know, it's a license to print money.
I think the main reason he's doing it is that, you know, obviously the DAZN deal was very, very expensive for DAZN, costing them lots of money, and part of that is that Eddie Hearn has to deliver, doesn't he? He has to deliver subscriptions. He has to put shows on that attract subscriptions, and he knows that this is like printing money for DAZN.
Yeah,
they're going to get $500,000,
and I don't blame him for it.
$500,000. No, I know. I'm just saying. It's like, it seems like I'm, you know,
I just what makes me kind of inward smirk almost is when he's, you know, on IFL and the rest of it talking about, oh, you know, this is to try and bring in new boxing fans. I'm like, come on,
fuck off,
we're not stupid, for fuck's sake. Fine, everyone loves a pound note, and I understand it makes business sense, but don't give me this whole, oh, you know,
loads of new boxing fans.
We might have the future people that are going to be coming and watching the thing is Joshua Buatsi in a European title in 6 months.
The thing is,
time.
Getting into boxing is, it's a commitment, and you have to work at it. You don't just fall in love with boxing. Vast majority of people don't fall in love with boxing. It's like a slow burning, gradual infatuation that envelopes you eventually.
What do you think?
That was how it was for me. Is I watched David Haye, I was interested in him, and then I started watching some other fights, and then I learned some of the storylines around the boxers and what their past is, and I'd seen them fight before, so I watched them again. And that's how it grew for me. I didn't watch one person get knocked out and go, this is the sport for me. I don't think that's the same for everybody. And often it's like a communal thing. What my point is, anyway, is that if that is true, if any part of what I just said is true, that it's going to be very difficult for some 8-year-old dweeb who's interested in KSI to start following and start watching Billy Joe Saunders borefest these ways to a world title.
Can you tell me what do they do on YouTube? What where have they come from? What's Are they
KSI was a.
Do they play Fortnite? What do they do? Do they play Fortnite? And stuff?
Well, KSI. He was a. He played computer games. That's how he started. And Logan Paul was on. You know, do you remember Vine? Yeah, he was doing these 7-second clips. He got massive in Vine, and then that closed down. He went over to YouTube. And then, obviously...
I mean, fair play.
Well, they've got 20 million subscribers each. There's 40 million subscribers. Yeah. They've got more influence and more ability to generate money than almost any boxer that's ever lived. And they're getting paid £11 million each for this fight, not because they can box, but because they've done their work in terms of getting an audience. And all this is always is about influence.
That's how much they're getting paid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Serge, they're getting paid more than Sergei Kovalev did.
Yeah, but Sergei Kovalev doesn't have 20 million
subscribers. This is where the argument comes from, though.
Yeah, isn't an argument.
This is where the...
Christ.
No, but what I'm not the argument, but I mean, you know, when you see people within the game that are saying, you know, this isn't right because there's people that have, you know, spent 10 years of their life working to try and be a main event fighter and have not been given the opportunity, blah, blah, blah.
But they're not good enough, then. And they're not good enough.
These guys can come along and head a... And had a show, but it's always been about tickets. It's always been about making money, and it's always been about tickets. So, like I said, fair play to them. I understand it, you know. And I'm surprised that, you know, if it was someone, I mean, Billy Joe, for example, is going to fight on that undercard, and
Devin
and you know, they're giving it a whole about exposure to American market and all the rest of it. But you know, it's an easy show for him to slot in on. You know, what does he care? You know, it's always been about making a pound, though, and I don't blame them for it at all. I don't have a massive issue with it, to be perfectly honest with you.
No. So are you getting up at 4 o'clock watching it with?
No. No.
Do you really love this sport, Al, is what I'm asking you?
Well, I mean, if I was as fit as they are, I reckon I could probably beat... What weight is it?
Cruiser.
It's a cruiser.
Fuck me, I'd kill them. If I was fit and in that shape, I'd kill them.
I wonder if you would, because KSI especially has been boxing with a pro. They've got this pro boxer in Vidal Riley who's had 3 fights, and some other guy, I can't remember his name, but is in boxing, but he's essentially been doing training for 2 years straight now, so he's going to know how to throw a punch and stuff. I'm not saying you can't have him out, you probably can, but I'm just saying that I think
I will. So what I'll do now is over the next year is focus on sit-ups and Call of Duty and starting a YouTube channel, and then in 24 months time, there you go, me and Cal in the corner.
Yeah, that's Cal it in my that corner. Is it, just play Call of Duty for the next like 18 months and just start sliding digs in to one of them. KSI looks a bit smaller, so he looks the one like
I don't
can take him.
It's a cruiserweight,
but I can play it like oh, you know, like this is me now. Call of Duty, sit-ups, medicine balls, because I got no wife. This is it now. I'm coming for you.
You do need to fill your life with something productive, Al. No,
well,
on your own.
I have. We don't want to.
I know what you like, though. I know what you like. With this self pleasuring, that's you've got to.
Oh yeah. We don't talk about this. Podcast, mate. No. So yeah, head over to the Fighting Cock if you want to know more about that. Anyway. Let's talk about... there's nothing more on that card, really, Cow, is there, that we want to talk about?
Felix Cash against...
what fight that was?
So, no.
Jack Cullen was a fucking world...
Yeah, it's not much to say about it, right, but it was an absolute quality fight. If you want to watch just a good old proper English dust-up, then, that's a good way to spend 50 or 40 minutes of your time.
Yeah, if you want a fight to make you fall in love with the sport, it's Felix Cash against Jack Cullen.
And isn't that like the greatest contradiction, because it was a bit of a war, and you know, it's that kind of fight, blood and thunder, you know, people sweat, blood flying everywhere that attracts people to the sport, but it's also, you know, probably the most dangerous aspect of it as well.
Yeah. That was a really good fight, but that was about it for that card, really.
I didn't see Ben win, to be honest. Yeah. So.
Conor Benn boxed last week.
Oh, when was that?
That was
last
on Josh,
week.
That
did
was
he win?
Josh Taylor card. He boxed on that. He did win. He won in the fourth round.
All right, then.
it's like inviting like your drunk uncle at a wedding to come and have a chat.
Look, I'm not a fucking boxing geek, right? I like watching men fight. I can't know well, exactly where everyone's fought.
Well, I'm sure. I think you might be a boxing geek because I'm sure you're about to tell me now that last weekend just gone on Canelo Koblev, you're going to tell me how Evan Holyfield looked at super welterweight.
The lovely technician, lovely pugilist, gets on the end of a lovely jab.
Nice, nice words.
And you know, he's a proponent for the fine art of Queensbury rules.
Oh, nice,
nicely done.
Yeah, nice hooks, nice jabs. I've never heard of him. Who is he?
So yeah,
so
on. What do you mean? Yeah,
is that his son?
Is that Holyfield's son?
Is his son? Yeah. What do he look like?
Yeah, defeat.
He looks like Evander Holyfield has been left in the hot wash too long.
What did he box like then?
He beat him in 15 seconds, so it's really hard to say.
A debut, yeah, was it?
A chap called Nick Winstead.
Yeah. He stopped a guy that was 0-1 and knocked him out in 15 seconds. It was really, really hard to say.
Have you heard much about him, though? Is he tipped to do decent things, or...?
His debut, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah, not really. I don't think he's an elite amateur or anything. I think it's just, oh, I'm Evander Holyfield's son. Let's go and make some money.
I've got a question for you guys, because I don't know the answer to this. Is there ever been a son who has eclipsed what their father's done in the sport? And the ones I can think of is like, obviously, Conor Benn's never going to do what Nigel Benn did, nor is Chris Eubank Jr. And perhaps it's about where they come from and how badly they want it, or how whether or not they're forced into the sport because they've got nothing else. It's hard to kind of become a...
Well, I think you're always playing catch-up anyway, aren't you? Because if you're given that exposure early on, like Conor Benn is, you know, you forget how young Conor Benn is, really. You know, and all you need is a couple of proper domestic rivalries. He's the personality. Yeah. He's the type of personality that could get that. Whether Conor Benn can eclipse what Nigel Benn has done, then probably not. But could he have a career where there's just as much interest in him at some point? Maybe.
In terms of it,
he needs a rival, doesn't he? Definitely. He needs a rival, definitely. Doesn't he? The answer to that question is actually really easy. It's really stupid that I didn't think of it. Floyd Mayweather Jr.
Of course.
But
I wonder if Floyd Mayweather Jr. grew up in like a wealthy household, how successful were they financially?
I don't think they were that well, because his dad was selling crack, wasn't he? So I don't think he was.
The drive came from some.
But his dad was a name. His dad was a name. His dad had boxed Sugar Ray Leonard, so he was a guy that was kind of revered.
A few of them boxed.
And then Roger as well. Roger was a two-time world champion. And another guy that had boxed at a really, really high level. So, and then Jeff had a decent career as well. So, you know, he followed in their footsteps, if you like. And I'm sure there's other people as well that's just slipping my mind.
Do you know?
Well, it's interesting though. We'll see how Evan gets on, shall we?
Yeah.
There was some. There was another chap that fought, an American chap that fought at welterweight. I forget. I think he was fighting a Mexican.
It's Blair Cobbs.
Blair Cobbs. What a name. Yeah. What a name, Blair Cobbs.
I was going to ask you about him.
I'd not heard of him before. I'd not seen him before.
He's like really fun. He's like he's just like really big personality. Seems to get dropped a lot, but seems to get up and knock people out. He's going to have a really, really fun career. Like he's just, he's not going to be amazing. He's not going to be pound for pound number one or anything, but he's going to have, probably quite a short but a really, really fun career.
Looks the part,
yeah.
As well, you know, he's
what?
Yeah, I think I'd heard the name, but I'd not seen much of him. But he's 13-0.
Yeah,
I'm just looking at his record. It's there's no one on it. He's fighting the shit. What do you mean he looks the part?
He's going to have a Mickey Ward type career, isn't he?
What do you mean he looks the part?
Well, he looks apart in terms of his stance, like as a southpaw. He's just, I don't know, he just looks like he doesn't look particularly technically.
Anything about his physical appearance? Is it his hair or something?
His hair?
Yeah.
No, I mean, he just looks like he could get knocked down all the time because his stance is like, he just looked a bit all over the shop.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Does he not remind you a little bit, Flav, of Emmanuel Augustus?
I've never seen him fight, mate. I don't know, but he looks a bit like him.
His stance is—he's like yeah, kind of like what Alex said. He's kind of all over the
when
place.
When you said that, that like fun, and it's weird because I'd never seen. I didn't even know what he looked like, but immediately when you said fun, is Emmanuel Gus is what popped into my head. So it's funny you should say that. But while we're moving on, I'll just have a quick look at him on the old YouTubes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, you do that, and we'll talk about Ryan Garcia.
Okay.
So, I love. So, did you hear the announcer call him almost say Romeo Dunno? And he brought him out. I thought he said Romeo Dunn at one point.
Oh my god, that'd been amazing.
But yeah, so Ryan Garcia beat Romero Dunno at lightweight.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what to think about Ryan Garcia. He won the vacant WBO and WBC silver lightweight title.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't like him. I don't like watching him.
He ain't gonna do anything. He's got a really big like Instagram following. He's got quite a fun style.
Lovely hair.
Yeah.
Isn't he sort of co-signed by Alvarez?
Yeah, he's kind of like appearing on Alvarez undercards. He's with Golden Boy. He's almost like the new De La Hoya, just like the pretty boy kind of thing. But he's not going to do anything. And that the punches that caused the stoppage, they were grazing at best.
That was there was a lot on that, wasn't there? There was a lot of that all over social media.
I saw that. Yeah. I saw that. It was ridiculous. It was bad. And because I didn't watch the fight, but my only fear I can assume is that he got tagged just before that clip started, but I don't know if he did or not, because if that's what sends a man over, a professional boxer over now, then serious questions need to be asked.
Especially the guy that's like, it's like he's like 21-1. He had a good record. He was coming into it on good form. He's not the type of guy you'd expect to just fall over at the first shot.
I don't believe in dives either. I mean, I don't think that shit happens really anymore, but it looked so suspect, unreal.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I mean, he is called the Flash. Maybe we just didn't see the punch.
it might have just been he felt the power and just thought, oh, fuck this, I can't be arsed.
Yeah,
you know, which I think does happen. It's what the old school guys would call a tank job, just where you just, oh fuck this, I'm just going to go down. You know, it's not they're taking a dive like some guy in a fedora's walked over and said, and went over to them and said, oh, you're going down in the fourth, champ. I don't think it's any of those. It's just, oh, they feel the power and think, oh, sod this. Let's live.
Don't see enough fedoras these days.
Nah, we don't. Nah.
My brother walks around in a fedora. Yeah.
Does he?
Yeah, Ross, all the time.
Does he?
Shows it off, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I just watched this Blair Cobbs highlights fight. He's my new favourite fighter. I love him. he's so much like Augustus, is unreal. He's going to get slapped apart and smacked when he comes up against anyone decent, but that's my kind of fighter, definitely. I'm going to follow him from now on.
There we are. Excellent.
Good. There you go. He can be the new adopted fighter of
I don't have to come on the Blow the Belt anymore, but I can do like a Blair Cobbs update every now and then.
Okay. Excellent. Just follow all his social medias and just tell us what he's been up to.
Absolutely. Can we talk about Saul Alvarez? Are we going to do that at all?
Let's get on to it. I like to cover the card. If you're waking up and staying up all night, you want to talk about the card. So
what about the wait for the main event?
What do you mean?
Yeah, it was like an hour and a half wait. The pair of them were laying on the couch because they were waiting for UFC to finish.
Oh, is that what it was about? I mean, it was Masvidal fought Diaz, didn't he? It was quite a big fight, so you can understand why. Does that not show a little bit about like the bollocks going in, or is it just sensible for them to wait, or just they're worried about going up in the might of the UFC?
Fucking come on, Saul Alvarez is the biggest draw in the sport. You don't do that. You don't do that. Like, if you're the guy in boxing, you don't wait for a UFC fight. That's not even for their world title. It's not Conor McGregor. It's not Brock Lesnar. It's fucking Nate Diaz for a pretend belt that they've made up.
I agree, mate. I absolutely agree. There's no way Canelo should be waiting around for that shit. But it ain't up to him, is it?
Yeah. Leonard Ellerby was on, I, you know, because we was all waiting for it to happen. So I was flicking through Twitter and Leonard Ellerby was like, what the fuck are they doing? What's going on? Because if you're the man, the draw in the sport, you don't wait for anybody. And they shouldn't have waited for fucking, like, Nate Diaz is cool, but they shouldn't be waiting for fucking Nate Diaz. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it wasn't great, but, you know, by that time I was up.
Like you said earlier on, Al, you said earlier on about how Eddie Hearn, they've spent, or DAZN, they've spent a lot of money on boxing. They need to maximise and try and get as many subscriptions as they can because they've spent so much money on boxing. It's probably not sustainable, to be honest. So if they're going to do that, then they have to try and wring every pound note or dollar note out of it. And if that means waiting for Nate Diaz, then I guess I can understand why. But
it would 100% been a decision by the broadcaster. And they rule sport, don't they? But it's disrespectful to both fighters because especially Canelo because he's the biggest fighter and biggest name in boxing. He should be going, fuck this, get me in the ring.
Yeah, and he needs to leave Oscar De La Hoya and leave and start going it alone now. He doesn't need De La Hoya anymore.
He's one of the most
De La Hoya,
unlikable men, isn't he, in boxing? De La Hoya is just so intensely dislikable about him. Did you George Masvidal, who fought Nate Diaz in the UFC, has come out and said he wants to fight Canelo. Just as a quick little side note to the fact we're talking about both.
I don't care about side notes like that. We'll not talk about it. Fuck it.
Let's talk about this fight.
Love of Christ. Right, Cal. How did you have it when the stoppage came?
Level.
What was your cards?
I had it 5-all, but I had given a couple of really close rounds to Canelo. So if anyone was winning, I would have had Kovalev winning by a couple of rounds. But at the time, I had it 5 rounds apiece.
Flav? I had Kovalev 3-up.
I had Kovalev 4-up. I had 93-97, yeah.
And I think that's the end of our dream, isn't it, Cal? The stuff we've been talking about on these podcasts for the last 4 weeks or so about Canelo Alvarez going up to light heavyweight and cleaning up and then going up to cruiserweight and cleaning up. It's not going to happen, is it?
No. I'm not giving up.
You've got to give up for his own sake. He can't do it.
No, because genuinely, I think it was tactical. I think that was Canelo's plan.
Absolutely.
The amazing though, we were talking about judging earlier on. One of the judges gave Canelo the first round and he did nothing. He did nothing at all. Like, nothing. He just followed Kovalev around and Kovalev just kind of poured jab. Like, neither of them did anything.
Canelo was given four of the first five.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how that works. I mean, I had Kovalev 5-1 up going into the sixth. It's 4-1 up, sorry, going into the sixth. I mean, it was, you know, it's not the point, but I wanted to highlight that in terms of the cards because I think everyone, you know, when you look back, I think everyone could see that both fighters were fighting to tactics. Kovalev in particular very rarely kind of really detonated or tried to detonate that right hand. I think he would have, you know, he looked at the last couple of fights and seen how he's gassed when he's tried to use that right hand and it's not got them out of there. Or it hasn't landed, or it's not worked how he wanted to do it, and you can't do that against Canelo because of what happened essentially. And I think Canelo was like, well, you know what? I think particularly after the first round, like you say, Cal, he did nothing in that first round. It's quite easy to see that this is what Kovalev's plan is. You know, he wasn't even jabbing him really, was he? It was just touching him. You know, which is fine. You know, that's a perfectly legit tactic because he was winning rounds, and you know that was fine. But I think he felt, well, I'll just do this then. I'll let him tap and tap and tap until it gets to a point where I can, you know, where he can push the thing. And I think you're right, Cal. There was never a point where I was like, what is Canelo doing? He's got to put his foot on the gas here or he's going to be in trouble. It was always like, well, let's just get to the, you know, championship rounds, 10th, 11th, 12th, because then that's going to tell us what everyone's actual game plan is.
Yeah.
And then we saw it straight away.
Yeah. It looked like that was exactly what he was trying to do the entire time, which was to just take him late. You talk about fighters when they get old, you know, Sergey Kovalev's 36 now. They always say, oh, the last thing to go is their power. But I think the first thing to go with a fighter that's getting old is their willingness to take a shot. or their willingness in particular to pull the trigger. If you think about Shane Mosley, he couldn't pull the trigger. Once he had the Margarito fight when he was amazing, he lost to Floyd, he couldn't pull the trigger that night, he lost to Manny Pacquiao, and it just went. And you see that with fighters, that they just can't pull the trigger anymore because they're scared about what's coming back. And
well, I mean, do you think that happened with Kovalev? I think it looked more of a case of him that this was the plan.
I think that was his game plan, but I do think that he didn't really put much purchase on the jab. He didn't put much purchase on any shot. No. And I think that was because he was a little bit worried about what was going to come back at him, and he was probably a little bit worried about exerting too much energy as well. But I thought Canelo played an absolute blinder tactically. Mm. And you have to really rate his corner. Like, you look at these guys, and they've not got loads and loads of world champion fighters like a Freddie Roach did back in his peak, but they're really good. Those guys, Eddie Reynoso and all those guys, they're really good, and they seem to get their tactical plans right every time. You look at the second Golovkin fight, where the plan was to just walk Golovkin down, and again Kovalev. You know, again, the game plan was really good against Danny Jacobs. I thought he fucking washed Danny Jacobs, to be honest. Yeah. I thought he beat him 10-2. And then again on Saturday night, solid game plan.
And you know what? The best game plans like that always make you think afterwards, well, yeah, that's so simple. Of course that would be the game plan. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And when you sat back and actually thought about it afterwards, you thought, well, yeah, of course, what... stupid, of course, he wouldn't do anything else. That's exactly what he should have done. And that's always what the best game plans are, is that they are simple, and they make it look simple at the end of that fight because it's worked so effectively. I mean, it was a fun fight to watch because, I mean, Canelo just... he's the only fighter that I really can remember watching that when his knees dip and he's about to throw that kind of left... hook or left uppercut into the body, but sometimes I wince because I can see it. I can see the power in it.
I've watched that finish about 20 times.
Yeah.
Finish, like he dips to throw the left hook, and you think he's throwing to the body, but he doesn't. He faints and comes upstairs, and he lands right on Kovalev's ear with that left hook.
Mm. I think he showed
bang on the ear,
and it was a great finish, absolutely great, and showed that class afterwards as well. And he wasn't sure whether or not Kovalev was okay.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus. I mean, Kovalev was...
buckled.
Was dreaming... Was remembering the first time he's had, you know, goulash before he'd even hit the ropes. Racist.
I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming.
I was going to say ice cream, but I thought...
I knew it was coming.
T's made a point several times after the fight. I think he made this point about 10 times, actually, about the accusation. I think Eric Morales came out of it on Twitter. He said that he chooses fighters past their prime. He's very very clever about when he chooses to fight fighters. He talks about Golovkin not being the man he was when they fought, and obviously Kovalev's on the downward slide, although to me it didn't look like he was on the downward slide when they fought. But What do you make of that? Do you think they're being very selective and clever about how they matchmake Canelo?
Partly, but I think...
You're gone now.
Sorry, yeah. I think people have... That's part of the game. It's about who you fight and when. You know, that's always been part of it. I don't think... I wouldn't have said that Golovkin was... Yeah, Canelo Golovkin took a long time to make, and longer than it should have, but
super fights do,
you know, Canelo Golovkin, the first fight was, you know, I wasn't thinking at that point, wow, Golovkin's done. Yeah, I mean, it's something that is worth mentioning, but I think that's part of it, about fights that you take when and how, and yeah, I mean, it's not like he's cruising past all of these, you know, or scraping past all of these. Do you know what I mean? There still isn't any part of me that thinks, you know, would he have not been able to beat Kovalev before Kovalev fought Ward?
Mm.
You know, in terms of, you know, forget timing and weights and the rest of it. I just mean that Kovalev. I still think he probably would have beat him. It's easy to say that, obviously, but it's, yeah, a yes and no. I think there is some merit to it, but also that's part of boxing. It's part of the plan that you make.
Mm.
Yeah, I think when me and T recorded a couple of weeks ago, we said about the Kovalev fight, and there's a reason he picked Sergei Kovalev out of all the light heavyweight champions. I think there's two reasons. Yes, he's on the way down, but also he's the most known out of all the. The thing is, what somebody said today I saw on Twitter is that Canelo Alvarez chases big events. He chases big time matchups. It's not always about who's the best fighter, it's about who's going to create the biggest event in boxing. Mm-hmm. I think Golovkin, if you think about Golovkin, his kind of that by the time he became like a big money fighter, like a guy that you could put on pay-per-view in a huge event, he was 36.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
That's nobody's fault. If he would have been the guy who he is and he'd have been 28, I think Canelo still would have fought him. It's just that he wasn't commercially viable, Golovkin, until he was 36. The fight before their first fight was the Danny Jacobs fight for Golovkin. So so I can see where those accusations come from, that there perhaps is a little bit of merit in that, but he's not the first fighter to do it. Floyd did it. Sugar Ray Leonard did it. Ali never rematched Foreman. Jack Johnson didn't fight Sam Langford. Like, they've all done it. It's when you're the biggest name in the sport, you kind of, you're the straw that stirs the drink, and so you get to kind of pick and choose how things are done.
I think there's a couple of things.
Go on.
There's a couple of things. There's one, he's had 53 fights. He's 29. He's had 53 fights already. He's allowed to kind of pick his way through his career at this point, for sure. He's not going to have to fight murderers every single time he fights just to placate some critics on Twitter or elsewhere, or Eric Morales. And the other thing is he fought Mayweather when he was coming up. And I know that's like a low risk, big return, because no one really expected him to win, because it's Floyd Mayweather. But he still fought him. Finally, if you're going up to light heavy, which is quite a dangerous division for a man as small as him to walk into.
It is the hardest division in the sport.
It's the hardest division for someone who's
the gulliest division in the sport.
But for someone his size to do it is even more gully. And the fact that he's gone in there and chosen probably the weakest champion out of the lot. He's within his rights to do it. He's moving up to light heavy. Why? That's complete sense. Ease your way into division. And I'm saying ease your way with Kovalev, which is mad. But just make the correct decisions. And then one day, when you fight Beterbiev, or Beterbiev, you'll be in a better position than having your brain scrambled now, because, you know, jokes aside, he's not beating anyone else in that division, I don't think. Even with...
I think he'd beat
Bivol. Maybe.
Yeah, I think he'd beat Bivol.
Maybe. He wouldn't beat Vozdik.
Yeah, and you've got to remember, it'd be in Vegas and he'd win the first three rounds without him getting off the stall.
I mean, what is next then? I mean, they talked about Golovkin again after the fight, and he was like, I mean, what's the point?
He talks about cruiserweight. He's talking about cruiserweight. He wants to go up to cruiser.
And I think... All jokes aside, the next fight is Andy Ruiz at heavyweight. Yeah. Three of the four world titles.
Do you Callum Smith?
I know, you know. That's the thing. It's like Callum Smith is the best super middleweight in the world, but he's a fucking...
Well, he said if
again, and they would look at Callum Smith, and they would go, like you said, he chases the events, but then saying that he did Liam Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe he wants another brother. Maybe he wants to go through the whole family.
I'd love that. If he called out Paul Smith afterwards.
I think Billy Joe Saunders is more likely. Saunders has that. He'll have the thing off the back of Lemieux. He'll have... He's
boxing this weekend.
And was meant to be... you know, obviously the Andrade fight got pulled, but... You know, has some notoriety because of the drug stuff and because, you know, on... Billy Joe Saunders and Andrade was being pushed big on DAZN at the time as well.
Yeah.
I think that's more likely. I think if you're looking at Callum Smith, you'd think, well, you know, again, he's a massive super middleweight, horrible reach. You're talking about picking people at the right time, you know, and chasing events. There's just no logic in Callum Smith right now.
There's no... I don't think there's logic in Callum Smith or Billy Joe Saunders. I don't think... He's the only words that have left his mouth is that he's not going down. in that he's interested in fighting
yeah.
at cruiserweight. I'm not. That wasn't me mucking about. These are words that have come out of his own mouth.
No.
So why is he going to yeah. go and fight a relatively nobody in terms of the bouts that he has been connected in?
Well, yeah, but you'll see. It's money. DAZN, it's easy to make with Billy Joe. I think it'll be... and they've had negotiations before, and I think they've come closer, Billy Joe and Canelo, than they have Billy Joe and Golovkin in the past. And I think, you know, there's a reason why Billy Joe would have signed with it. I think that's something that has probably already been discussed to an extent. I think it will happen. I think we'll see Billy Joe and Canelo.
I think it's Bivol next. Bivol's talking about going down to 168 to fight him. I can see Canelo fighting him at some weird 170, something like that. Yeah. For two of the light, because then if you do it at a catchweight, then you can throw in Bivol's light heavyweight title as well.
True.
So you can make it unification, but slightly below light Love heavy. It.
Love it. unified light proper heavy. Dirty. Yeah.
It's a proper Canelo thing to do. It's like, right, all right, you can fight at 170, but we're going to have your belt. And
cruiserweight world title at light heavy.
Yeah, it's just going to be like, yeah, we're going to fight. It's going to be closer to super middle than light heavy, but we're going to have your belt. Yeah. And you're going to take your money and you're going to be grateful for it. And, you know, I wouldn't mind if he fought Bivol and Callum Smith fought Billy Joe Saunders, because I think those two need each other.
Yeah. Well, Callum Smith needs something for love of... I mean, well, hopefully John Ryder takes his belt. That'd be a joy.
Yeah, no,
that'd be funny.
I don't really want to see Canelo go down and fight anyone now. I think he's made the step up. You stay there. Let's see what you can do. I don't want to go sit watching. Go down and beat up Callum Smith. I can't be bothered to watch that.
Yeah.
Do you think he'd win?
What did you? No. Do you not think Canelo? I mean, Canelo Callum Smith is a good fight.
Yes,
that's something I want to see.
It's not as good as Bivol, is it?
Yeah.
Or, potentially Beterbiev. Better. Those are better fights. They're more exciting.
Yeah. Well, only is because of the unknown of it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. There is no unknown about him fighting Callum Smith, though, is it?
Well, I want to see if Callum Smith is. I mean,
he's not talk about not good enough. You know, no one is at that way.
Well, I don't know. Callum Smith. I mean, he fought. You know, he beat a one-armed George Groves. And
you can't not say it, can you? You can't.
Well,
I agree with you. I'm a big fan of his as well, Al. I'm just saying, you can't not say it.
It's nothing to do with the fandom. It was he had a fuck shoulder, and he needed to get to that fight to keep his.
Al, are you on? Are you in the room where you've got that picture on the wall?
Yes.
Do you want to tell listeners who's on that picture?
I've got a. It's one of those canvases that's made out of six individual pieces that show. George Groves knocking every ounce and drip of sweat off of Carl Froch's massive chin.
I looked at that and I was like, I know how much you love George Groves, and I do too. But doesn't it just remind you that you lost that fight?
It's not a question. I love George Groves, but I love that fight. That fight, we talked about boxing earlier, and we talked about how, you know, I was already into boxing and I enjoyed it and I enjoyed watching it. And I was starting to watch more and become more involved in it. But I wouldn't say that I loved it. That fight, I fell in love with boxing that night, because it was just George, you know, just everything that had come up to the build up with him leaving Adam Booth and standing in the middle of the ring with just Paddy behind him, and then Froch being completely surrounded by all his brothers, Rob McCracken, you know, whatever, all the team around him, and George just kind of staying in that middle of the ring, and it's just. You know, there was some theatrics about it, and everyone figured he had no chat. I loved it.
Do you, do you think that if there wouldn't have been a massive fallout with Adam Booth, and that he had him in the corner, that he would have won that fight?
I used to think that. I don't think so as time goes. I think the more we've seen of, the more we saw of George as time went on, I think we saw that latter rounds are a problem, and I think Frosch probably would have got him at that point.
Yeah.
You know, it's a shame that round that he put him down ended when it did. You know, in terms of when he put Frosch down, because that, you know, if that had been a tad earlier, who knows?
Hmm.
You know, I don't think Adam Booth would have said to him, "Put your foot on the gas properly with a minute and a half to go in the first round." So I don't really see what would have changed. But yeah. Anyway, we're getting off topic. Cal, you asked about
Yeah, Canelo, so a lot of the talk, a lot of the talk is kind of like, is Canelo pound for pound number one now?
Has to be.
He's been my number one for ages. He's been my number one.
He's got to be, isn't he?
Yeah, I think. Yeah,
because the
weight
of his achievements outweigh the weight of Lomachenko's at the moment.
It's tricky. I mean, it's so subjective. I mean, you look at Lomachenko, and I just it's like watching. It's a bit like Ronaldo and Messi. I look at Lomachenko as just a ridiculous technician that has just completely perfected everything that you possibly need to be an incredible boxer. But then you look at Canelo, and there's almost an art to it, like you do when you look at Messi. With Ronaldo, it's like a finely tuned machine.
Yeah.
Whereas Messi is more, you know, just that. It just seems to just him, and that's just what happens. And it might fade away one day, but when it's at its best, this is pure, just God-given talent and intuition.
Yeah,
and that's how I feel with Canelo and Lomachenko.
My answer is that Lomachenko is the better boxer. If you had to choose between the two, Lomachenko is better, but Canelo's achievements in the ring they far outweigh what Lomachenko's done, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter, does it, really? I mean, it's
pound for pound. It's an interesting talking point, Alex. We're just having a conversation. It's a boxing podcast, isn't it?
Well, I've had enough now.
You can't just say it doesn't matter
in 30 seconds' time. Of course it does. I'm the host, so it doesn't matter. What, next, so we've got, where's Callum Smith and John Ryder,
So 23rd.
23rd.
Hmm.
We won't talk about that now then. But
no. So 23rd, and I think that's the same weekend as Wilder, you know?
Yes.
Wilder and Luis Ortiz, too.
That'd be fun to watch. I mean, I wonder what Ortiz has been... What's Ortiz been doing in the last year? Anything?
Yeah, he always the same shape.
Oh, one more thing. Can I ask one more thing before we go?
Is it about a prediction league?
No, not at all. No. Because we were talking earlier about George Groves and having one arm and all of that, do you think that if George Groves, in the condition he was in against Callum Smith, do you think he could have Carl Frampton in a fight?
I saw that, didn't you? I didn't realise there was beef between
you. You'd like to think so, wouldn't you?
It's the weirdest beef because I really like both of them.
Well, do you know what it is? It's part of it will be the whole George is well in with the McQuiggans now. So that makes it easy to, you know.
I don't think Frampton has a problem with Shane. I think he's got a problem with Barry.
The accusation is Barry was nicking money out of his pocket.
Well, yeah, they've got a court case going on, so we can't really say too much about it.
Yeah, and I think
what you reckon the influence of this podcast can affect the court case.
Yeah.
You're best to be on the safe side.
It's
a weird one. I saw it when
So should we just sum up what happened, just in case anyone hasn't seen it? So Frampton essentially said that George Groves quit against Callum Smith, which I think is an absolute nonsense. And George has taken exception to that and saying that essentially you have no idea what I had to go through just to even get in that ring. So, you know, with a few other choice words about it. Like the fact that he asked people on Twitter to tag him in because he couldn't tag him. And then every reply, the first 7,000 replies were all just people tagging in Carl Frampton.
I've got one thing to add as well. There's two pieces of boxing content that I've absorbed over the last couple of weeks since I've last been on there. Jane Crouch's story was fascinating. There's a couple of podcasts, depends how you want it. Mm-hmm. The Sky Sports did one. Trish Dixon did one as well. Her story is so interesting, much more interesting than I thought it was, and just how important she was in women's boxing becoming a professional sport in the UK and what she went through to get to that point is really, really interesting story. And the Emil Griffith story, The Ring of Fire, it's a documentary that was produced in 2005. I won't say too much because how I heard about it, they did a spoiler, but this is a brilliant young Afro-American boxer who had a very eventful life and some really kind of tragic and mad stuff happen in his boxing career. But if you've got time,
where can we
YouTube.
Find that?
It's on YouTube. Someone uploaded it to YouTube, so you can just go there and watch it. It's pretty cool.
Well, I'll tell you what I watched again the other day and hadn't watched for a long time, but thoroughly enjoyed, was Muhammad and Larry. the 30 for 30.
Yeah, I love that. 30 for 30 is great. Have you, did you listen to the one, just while we're doing this, there's a podcast, 30 for 30, about the guy who was, I don't remember his name, and it was a long time ago I listened to this, but he was a, he got put in prison, I think for murder. He was a boxer.
Yes.
And they engineered it so he could fight in prison and defend his world title. Incredible story.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen that.
It was really an audio, it's podcast really only, I think, this one. I'll find it out and send it over to you.
Good.
Excellent. We'll tweet it off the account.
Cool.
Off the Blur the Belt account. Your man Donald McRae wrote a book about Emil Griffith.
Did he really? I didn't know that.
Yes, it's called A Man's World. I read it about a year ago. It's really good.
Yeah,
really good.
I'm about halfway through Brightness or Sunshine, Darkness or Sunshine, I should say. So, once I've done, I'll give a little review. But I'm not going to say anything that we don't know already. Don McRae can fucking write about boxing.
Yeah, he's very good.
Book nerds.
Okay.
Did you just say book nerds?
Well, you go read your books. I'm going to go and have a beer and do some plastering.
Yeah, get on Skype. So, get back on Skype when you get a chance. It's called The Fighter Inside. 30 for 30. When you're doing your drinking your beer, I'd listen to it. It's only 40 minutes. It's such a good story.
Sweet. I shall put that in.
Bye, mate.
Thank you for joining us, Flav. This is nice of you to be filling in when we've needed you, but I don't think we will need you that much from now on. So
I'm literally doing you a favour. Do you think I'm not got?
If you could post your keys back through the letterbox on your way out, that'd be lovely.
I've basically just gone in and just taken care of your wife while you've been away. Essentially, that's what's happened.
What wife?
You can't say that about yourself, Al. That's the jokes for us to make. You're still technically married.
Yeah, that's true, and she's a wonderful, and she's a wonderful,
she's a lovely lady. Lady.
She's
total babe. Total
what? What should we do? Have you said about the prediction league? Because I've been done. Have we claimed that whilst I've been away? Are you going to say who the winner is, or do you not want to?
He knows it.
Why don't you want? Why don't you want Chris to take the glory?
I hate him. Just so much. Just every boxer he liked, I hate.
Who's his favourite boxer?
All the fighters I like, he hates. It's probably Gennady Golovkin or Manny Pacquiao. Like, he just, all the guys that I don't like at that time, because I don't hate Golovkin, but all those guys that I don't like, he likes.
Okay.
And the guys that I like, he doesn't.
He knows
like.
His boxing, though, doesn't he?
Yeah. So we just, he does know his onions.
Can I just qualify the fact that I finished bottom of the league because I don't participate in it.
Yeah. So I saw that 10 points. I was like, Alex is rubbish.
I don't participate in it because I shouldn't have to, and I don't need to. I won it the first time, right? So I've got nothing to prove to anyone.
That's true.
Right? Everyone is following in my shadows. I'm the trailblazer of everything to do with predicting boxing fights now.
Yeah, you didn't actually finish bottom. I just cropped to the table so it looked like you finished bottom. There's like fucking 10 people below.
That is beautifully petty.
Right, let's go, because this is shit.
Bye.
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 All right, press stop.
Okay.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.